Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Did you know that water law in the United States, it's actually older than the United States? And water rights in Montana, they are considered property rights. They can't be owned, but the right to use water can be owned. And it's sort of a use it or lose it type of rule in Montana. What is Montana's water law like? And is it working for Montanans? The legislature has attempted to pass some bills regarding water laws in Montana. Some were passed. We got, I think we're about the only state in the union that has a specific water court. We'll talk about all of that today because, well, you know, we're a pretty arid state and water is pretty darn important. Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, State Senator Wiley Gault with us for this Tuesday on Voices of the Month. And thank you guys for being here. I hope you're doing well. Yeah, water's on our minds. We want to get in it. We need to drink it. We need to use it. It needs to, you know, feed our animals and feed our grains. And boy, a lot of times it just ends up feeding, you know, the fight, I guess, because water is so valuable in Montana. I'm not going to go into it because I think we'll talk about that value as we get into the discussion on some of these bills that were addressed in the Montana 69th legislature. And they dealt with, revising exempt water right laws, the state water rights, temporary leases, and as I mentioned too, establishing more of a, I guess it's a full-on water court. Let's welcome our guest, the Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, House District 33 out of Savage, back to the program. And Speaker Lear, how are you, sir? I hope you're doing good.
I'm doing well, Tom. Good to be home, and nice to be back and working.
Have you got it unwound yet, or is still some of it wound up in there?
Oh, it'll be wound up for a while. Yeah. It's quite a process we have. You know, you go 90 days, or I guess we went 85, and then all of a sudden it's just done. So you kind of come back to normal life.
Senator Gault, thank you for showing for being on the program here as well. Senate District 39 out of Martinsdale. How are you doing? Are you unwound or still a little tight from it all?
Well, luckily, I just went from that wound up to, I figured when I hit the ranch, I was about 2 to 3 weeks behind, so I stayed wound up just in a different way, but I get the bonus of just being a freshman senator. I can wash my hands and walk away, unlike Speaker Lear, so he still has to do a little work after the session's over.
Well, and you know that, too, because you were Speaker of the House in the 67th session, too, so thank you guys again both for being here. We'll start out with Speaker Lear. Give us an overview of the bills. And I know you carried a major bill, and there was a lot of discussion. And you know, whether bills get passed or not, there is a lot of value in those discussions about these bills on the floor going forward. But your sense of what we did with water in this last session?
Well, a lot of the bills we carried, they died at certain points. We didn't get as many as we'd have liked to the governor's desk, and some of them that we did get to the governor's desk, you know, he vetoed. And we dealt with everything from, you know, Senator Gault had a lot of exempt well bills. We had on the House side, we had a couple bills that would have got rid of the water court after a certain period of time, you know, dealt with water rights on state lands, trying to curtail some of the stuff that's been going on with the land board and, season private water rights. And, we fought hard. We got our messages out there. And in the end, we didn't get as much done as we'd like to on them issues, or the bills didn't make it as far as we wanted to the process. And, I guess we'll just have to keep working at it next time.
Yeah, I think, Senator Gault, you might echo that comment, too, about a lot of things out there on the air, but maybe not as much across the finish line as you'd like to have seen.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I think we did start a lot of great conversations about it. I know a lot of these next session comes around, we're going to be seeing the same things. And when it comes to water, you know, we joke there's not as many boots underneath those desks as there used to be. So there is a huge education process when it comes to water with a lot of legislators. So a lot of these end up being multi-session issues just because you got to get everyone educated before, you know, you get to the final package.
And I appreciate those comments as well. And I think people can see that as, you know, if they're watching the legislative session. And that's probably all a part of it. Speaker Lear, you know, as a leader of that entire body, you know, and you've said this when you've been on the air, you want to make sure that every bill has its opportunity. It doesn't matter R or D on it in that regard. And so it does take that education process. Let's just start off with one bill that you were carrying that would revise some state land and water laws. So what's done is it was House Bill 676. Let's talk about that one.
Yeah. Also 676 in its original form did a lot more than just revise state lands and water laws. It dealt with trying to deal with the water court and getting, you know, putting a completion date on the adjudication process. And then it did deal with water on state lands. And like Senator Galt said, there's not near as many agriculture people involved, and, you know, in this process as there used to be. And so now you're, you know, not only are you fighting against the state, you're fighting against developers and everybody else. And they have, and environmental groups too, and they have just as much right to that water as agriculture does. But it seems like agriculture is starting to fall down that tier, and we need to make sure that the water rights that we do have, and if we do develop a new private water right, that the state can't then seize that if we don't want to lease that state land anymore. So that's kind of the you know, down and dirty on that, what 676 did. And with the water court, I guess, as a conservative, I see that, you know, that as I don't want to expand government. When they're done adjudicating the process, when they're done with the adjudication process, that water court should, you know, go away, and then it should, in any water cases, should fall at the district court level where they were meant to fall, instead of creating a whole new government, you know, regulation arm in a sense from the water court.
Yeah, and I, you know, and that's an interesting argument for people to discuss, how much the state should be involved. And I think we've seen, and Senator Galt, maybe you can comment on this one as well, House Bill 676, but and what it's trying to accomplish. But managing those water resources, the complication, I think, is, you know, all of the laws that we have in our state just go back, well, what they predates the United States, so to speak. So do we have good clarity going forward, or what do we need to get that kind of clarity so we are not always in a water court situation?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that if you look back at the history of this, when the water court was started, it was to go through adjudication, which I don't think anyone disagrees needed to happen. When the water court was created, it had its purpose, and we all knew what it was doing. It was supposed to last, I can't remember if it was 4 or 6 years. And here we are almost 50 years later, and the water court is still going through that work. So, I mean, it was originally built as something that has this little pie of work it's supposed to do, and then it was supposed to disappear. And, you know, it was set up for the district courts, which, you know, the judges are from the area. Your ditch riders can actually just drive down the road to go talk to the district judge when it comes to the water stuff. And instead of making everyone go to Bozeman to do it, it just seems that if we keep with the district courts, you keep it right where everyone is their neighbor, and they have to look at the people when they're making these decisions and not someone who could be a whole state away from them.
Why do people argue, and Senator Galt, go ahead and follow up on this. Why do people argue a need for a separate water court? Is it just the number of cases that we have? And I know I've heard the discussions, but air them for us here.
Yeah, I think it's kind of two parts. It's, you know, to try to, because there's not a district court judge that when the session is in session that won't say that they're overworked and they need another judge or they need more time and they need more money. But, I mean, I think that's just a game every government agency plays when we're in town, is everyone wants a little more money. But the amount of water cases that the water court actually take from the district court is so small that there is... If they actually want to move that needle, there's other parts of law that you could create a specialty court for that would actually cut down their workload. And then the other argument they use is, you know, the specialization of it is that, you know, these water court judges have just been dealing in water. They're not doing all other variations of the law. So that, you know, the thought being is that that's what they understand. That's their specialty, so that you're going to get better decisions from it. And then that's where my argument comes through. It's like, I'd rather have a decision from someone who listens to the people of the district than someone who knows water law in and out, who's not anywhere near the area, might not understand, you know, the landscape and what water looks like through that area.
And Speaker Lear, I was just going to have you comment on how that played out in the House, that discussion about extending the water court. What's your sense of that?
Well, we killed the bill that extended the water court to you know, just to take away the sunset on the water court. And to echo off of a little bit off of Wiley's points there, the water court was never meant to be permanent. They were meant to just adjudicate the process and be done. And the main argument behind keeping the water court in place is because these guys have the institutional knowledge. And the one other argument is that if at district court levels, if that district court judge is booked with other cases, it may be 2 or 3 years before that, you know, water case is taken care of. And my argument to that is that, you know, then maybe we need to look at, you know, maybe creating a few more district court judges to take care of the caseload there instead of creating one new set of, you know, keeping the system permanent. And my biggest fear with keeping it permanent is that it's going to be a political motivator. And if we get somebody that is anti-ag or anti-development, or even somebody that's so far right they don't care about, you know, the environmentalist side of it, it could be used as a political weapon, because these are appointed by the governor. And so, you know, we don't want water to be politically driven. We want to make sure that there's enough water in the river for the fish, there's enough water for the guy that's developing a piece of land, and there's enough water for the guy that's trying to raise the crops to feed the world.
You know, and I like how the legislature is not afraid to say, I don't care who is in the executive seat, that is just too much power, and it usurps, you know, the legislative branch in a lot of ways, too. And we see that in a lot of ways in our water courts as well. Your sense of this, I mean, does the DNRC have that right codified legally, or what needs to be done to clarify so there's no injustice in this?
Yeah, and so my view on this is that when you the state doesn't put any money into state land. That's all the leasees' duties. If you want to build fence, put a water well, build corrals, do whatever you want to do to develop state land, that's on you, the person that leases the state land. And if you want to drill a water well that's actually on state land, then you know that well is going to be, in a sense, owned by the state. And if you give up that lease, then that well or any improvement you put on the state land is going to go to the next person that leases it, you know, albeit they have to pay you improvements. But if you apply for a water right on your own private land and then use that to irrigate, water stock, what have you, and then you decide not to lease that state land, then I do not believe that the state should have any right in that water that's on private ground. Mm-hmm.
because you were the one that paid to drill it. You were the one that paid to, you know, drop the casing in the pump and run, you know, the electricity to that well. That's your water. That's on your land. And so I guess I just don't believe that the state then should have any right to that water because it's not on state land. And they had, you know, no financial input into developing that well. So why then should they have the ability to claim the water right on it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of see it that way. Senator Galt, your sense of this and perhaps the pro and cons for the way people look at it.
Yeah, and I guess I'll start with, because of the confusion of water and state land, a lot of people can't wrap their minds around it. The example I gave multiple times was, you know, the state owns buildings because state land even is in cities. So let's say you wanted to go lease a building from the state and put a bar in there, and you got a liquor license. To me, this would just be like the state coming in and going, oh, you know, that liquor license is worth money. Now it's mine because it's my fiduciary right to go in there and make sure I'm making the most money for the state. So now I'm just going to take part of your liquor license or the whole liquor license because now the building's worth more. So, I mean, that's kind of the example I give to, you know, more of an everyday look to what I feel is happening with the water when it comes to this. And I don't think we've seen the ripple effects from the huge negative that's happening is you now have ranchers going, well, I don't want to jeopardize my water right at all, so I'm not going to put any water on the state land, which now the land's not as, you know, profitable and not bringing in as much money for the state. So they use the argument that it's that their fiduciary necessity to do this so they can get the most money for the state. But I think the ripple is that they have just lost a whole bunch of money for the state because no one is dare going to put a drop of water on state land at the moment.
Yeah, and I think that's very realistic, and I appreciate how you put that. State Senator Wiley Galt, Senate District 39, Martinsdale, and also Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, House District 33 in the Savage area. Let's go to Skip in Hamilton on KLYQ. Citizen Skip, I hope you're doing well. Thanks for being on the air today.
Well, thank you, Tom, and I hope everyone had a meaningful Memorial Day weekend. And I've been watching closely the whole session. Brandon, I talked to you before and told you, and I'll repeat it, that I thought you did a fine job holding together the House of Representatives. And I think you set a good example that I wish the people in the Senate had picked up on through the whole session. And so, Mr. Galt, you're from Martinsdale. I worked along the Muscle Shelf a few times putting in alternative energy systems. Martinsdale is an amazing little town. But, sir, I wanted to ask you if you could tell us the dynamics that I'm not sure. I believe that this bill failed, but maybe it passed. And it was, I think, 368, which had a lot to do with exempt wells. If you could define what that is, and why that even came about, if you can touch on it. But I watched a lot of committees having to do with water. It's amazing how complicated it gets in the state of Montana. And I think Tom said Mark Twain is the one that came up with the statement, and I'd say he was exactly right when it came to fighting over water. And so please explain a couple of those things that happened that are going to affect everybody. Over here in Ravalli County, we would have been dynamically affected if that 368 passed. I don't know if it did or not. If you could explain it, I appreciate it, and exactly what an exempt well is. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Skip. Senator Galt.
Yeah, no problem at all. An exempt well is it described in the name. It is a well that is punched, you know, with outside of the permitting process. So it is exempt from all of that. So you just punch it and you can start, you know, bringing water up to a certain amount. 10 acre feet is the maximum that you're allowed to use with an exempt well. The original intent was that it's such a de minimis use that, you know, it was for punching water tanks, you know, a house and stuff like that. And what's happened over time is it started being used by development. so that a developer can come in and instead of tying the city water or going through the permitting process, they could just punch this exempt well and do their development. And then what happened with that is they started doing what they called phasing. So it would be, they would tie multiple exempt wells into one development so that they could actually build a decent sized development through the phasing. Right before the session, it was the Horse Creek Hills decision came out, which basically got rid of phasing. So the DEQ was giving predetermination letters at the first step. So all our whole exempt well process got flipped on its head right before the session and took away the phasing. So we're still dealing with some that are working through the process, but the impetus behind the exempt well bill was we're not on the current landscape we used to be, and we need to do something going forward. So it came from a working group that worked 18 months on this. And it had everyone at the table, had developers, had agriculture, and had the environmental groups all trying to figure something. So the original bill had red areas, and it did change. Said the Ravalli County is a very interesting part of the state. It's one of the only few that we had in a red area that didn't have any other forms for getting water. So through the process, we actually took Ravalli County out of one of the red areas because of that issue until we could get, you know, better city water systems through there. But what we were looking at when we came to red areas were places where there was 150 wells punched in a square mile. So you think about how many of that are going down. So it comes to a balancing act that, you know, you have your right to develop. You have, you know, the people, your senior water right users as well. And at what point do you punch so many wells that you're bringing down the water that is starting to adversely affect senior water right holders? And that was the mindset I went to carrying that bill, was to try to get everyone at the table. And this is a brand new topic. First time this idea has kind of ever been thrown out there. So there was a lot of pushback to it. Bill ended up dying on the Senate floor. And I know there's going to be a lot of conversations this interim. I serve on the WPIC Interim Committee, which is the water policy.
Well, you have groundwater exempt wells, water leasing, state land use, some modern challenges, perhaps with a warming climate, water rights adjudication. And don't forget the doctrine of prior appropriation in Montana. And this is pretty solid for Montana ranchers, and it has been for a long time. Montana follows the first-in-time, first-in-right principle, known as prior appropriation. We're talking about water here today on Voices of Montana with Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, House District 33, based out of Savage, and State Senator Wiley Gault, Senate District 39, out of Martinsdale. And I appreciate you both being on the program here. We'll have a call here in just a bit from Carl. In fact, why don't we take that? We're kind of open up at the moment. So, Carl DeVries, well, I'll give you a second as we get Carl on the air here. And Carl's been on the program before, definitely one of those advocates when it comes to water rights. Carl, good morning. You're on the air with Senator Gault and Speaker Lear.
Good morning, Tom, and thank you for having me. And first of all, thank you to these two gentlemen for the fight that they put up for us. Unfortunately, I'm finding as I travel around the state, you know, and meet with people in agriculture, they're all, yeah, we got to do something. But then they go back to the ranch and stick their head in the sand and wait for the part that's exposed to get bit. We need people that are members of Farm Bureau, stock growers, to start pushing back. We're pushing back against DNRC, which is just in a water trap. They're out of control. And we need the people to speak more. I mean, as they've indicated, we staved off some of these bills. We've been able to stop this permanent water court thing twice now in the past two sessions. But can we sustain that? We need people to become involved.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate that. Is there a question here behind that for Speaker Lear or Senator Gault?
Not really. They're doing great. They're hitting. They're checking all the boxes. They're just.
You're on pull ahead, so it's just out of the line.
Gotcha. Hey, super. Call DeVries once again. Why don't you stand on the line? I'll just throw it out there for a comment. Maybe it's Speaker Lear. And you probably have known Carl, probably worked with him, had kudos for you guys. Let's address that. Let's address how we educate people in, and people are going to have different opinions. You noted that earlier. Is it still a huge process of educating? And then let's hit right back to what you guys had said earlier. How do we get more boots in the legislature?
Well, I guess I'm going to start this off. You need, we do need more people with an agriculture background to serve. It's still Montana's largest part of the economy. And, we need more people that have a generalized understanding of that. And to Carl's point, getting more people that maybe not necessarily want to serve as legislators, but are able to, testify on these bills, give their representatives and senators a call and let them know, how they feel about these subjects. And then if you're a member of the Stock Growers and the Farm Bureau, to voice your opinions, because them organizations run off of, their membership. And if their membership isn't voicing their opinion, then, their direction is to go wherever the majority of people want them to go. And sometimes that may not be in favor of, what we see as the correct way to go about things with the water rights. And so getting more involved is never a bad thing. And whether that's coming and serving up in the legislature or just being a part of the process, whether that's, testifying in front of a committee or getting a hold of certain representatives and voicing your concerns. And one of the biggest things I guess I can say too is, just like Carl just said, is that when we do something that you appreciate, let us know. because sometimes we get up there and we feel like, we're in a bubble and everybody's against us. And why are we taking on this fight? So I guess if we do something right, let us know.
Yeah, I sure appreciate that too. Senator Gull, I want to have you talk about that too. I mean, you had kind of hit that as well. Sometimes it takes a number of years or sessions to try to get people in the body educated enough to make informed decisions on some water bills, but you're also dealing with changes in the legislative body throughout that period as well. So it's one step forward, maybe half a step back at times.
Yeah, the running joke that a lot of the people that have been around the building a long time say that the two worst things that ever happened for the Montana legislature is when redistricting started blocking up rural and cutting out the ranchers, and they put air conditioning in the building. But when you had those two things, you had ranchers who wanted to get home for calving, and once that building gets hot, no one wants to be in it. So it forced us to get our work done a little faster. So I mean, it's just the process of redistricting of, both Speaker Lear's in my districts are, the size of some East Coast states. And it's just to concentrate more people in the cities and then have these, rural guys that represent, six, seven, eight counties at a time. So it's just kind of the way our redistricting process happened that we're losing more and more agriculture people out of there, which I think is kind of starting to do a disservice to the state. I remember when I was speaker, I spoke at Stock Growers, and that was my one message to them is, there's fewer and fewer agriculture people in there. The majority of the legislature still listens to us when we pop up and say, this is good for agriculture, this is bad for agriculture. But as future goes on, that might not be the case. So that they really need to start working here shortly to make sure that their voices are heard and looking 10, 20 years down the road of things that we need to get done to protect agriculture as well, and start working on that now and not waiting for it to become a problem.
Hey, Carl, talk about your process in getting more people involved. You're a citizen. You obviously have some water right questions and issues you're dealing with. And I think as an advocate for certain policies, you've been trying to get more and more people on board. Talk about, as these two have said, some of the challenges in that, from that citizen standpoint.
Yes, thank you, Tom. So I'm a board member of a group called SARA, Senior Ag Water Rights Alliance. And we had a booth down at the Mate. We talked to at least 40 and a few more people. And, you know, they're all hyped up and interested and yeah. But we heard nothing afterwards. I mean, it was just dead silence. They don't follow through. Mm. I don't know. I try to work within Farm Bureau. You know, the Farm Bureau claims to be a grassroots organization, which they are, and I love that. I respect that process. But it only works if people are involved in it. And there's people that are in Farm Bureau that, oh, we don't like the idea of a permanent water court, and these bills are goofy. I mean, that last one had a Section 25 that would bankrupt most people trying to protect their water. And yet they don't say anything on their county level. Across the state, people in Farm Bureau have got to start doing stuff at the county level, the grassroots level, and start bringing it forward that they are unhappy with some of the resolutions that Farm Bureau puts forward. Same way with the straw growers and their resolutions.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate that. I mean, that citizen advocacy makes a huge difference, I think. And then noting for Senator Galt and Speaker Lear, too, that, hey, you know, thanks for hanging in that fight. Because it's, like you say, Brandon, you're getting that bubble there. And I can see it forming. And it's important that you stay in that bubble a little bit, too, because policy is it's very deep in a lot of ways, too. I got just a couple of minutes here. You two were you're currently Speaker of the House, Speaker Lear, and then also Senator Wiley Galt served as Speaker in the 67th Legislature. I don't know, Senator Galt, did you ever get a chance to peek in on the House and see how it was going, and pat Brandon on the back or poke him in the side?
Oh, only about every day. It was with the way the Senate was, and Brandon, I will of course say did a great job, but, we shared the same chief of staff. So, I would always go over and talk to her as well. Cause, she is a wealth of information. So I would like to thank the speaker for, me stealing his staff from time to time to help me out as well.
Couldn't say no, I suppose, Brandon, huh?
Yeah, no, probably not.
So, what did you did you take? Go ahead and answer that however you want. But I'm curious if you took anything, because you were in you were a member of the House of Representatives when Senator now Senator Galt was Speaker of the House. Did you take anything from that?
Oh, absolutely. So obviously, like you said, I stole his chief of staff. I brought Katie Winnetta back, and she is an asset above all assets when it comes to just the wealth of knowledge she brings in. She's probably got the better part of 10 sessions under her belt doing all sorts of different things up there at the Capitol, from being committee clerk to being partisan staff to and just being an advocate for whether that's agriculture, homeschooling, or whatever you have it there. She just is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to that stuff. And in 2021, when Wiley was speaker, I was a freshman, and Wiley definitely kind of invited me behind the curtain to see how things were done and see how the process was run. And I would, I guess, attribute a lot of what I'm doing today to him, because I just looked at that, and probably a month into my freshman session, I was like, "Yep, this is what I want to. This is where I want to be. I want to be speaker." Whether that was in the 25 session or 27 session, it worked out to be the 25 session, and I just knew that that's where I wanted to be. And I credit a lot of the knowledge I have and a lot of the way I go about things to how he did it, because obviously COVID was in 21, but just his leadership style and the way he handled everything, and I enjoyed working under him, and just wanted to kind of work the session the way he did, and I think it went fairly well.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. So I got just a couple of minutes left, so I'll ask you if there is both of you, what would be the secret? I mean, it's leadership qualities, but how do you run a nice tight session with 100 members on that floor? And believe me, they all have different ideas about every single bill out there.
For sure. You know, I think it's making sure that everybody's voice is heard. Whether you agree with them or not, they're elected the same way you are. You treat everybody with respect. And you treat everybody fairly, I guess. When somebody does something wrong, you make sure that you let them know that that wasn't right. And whether you're friends with that person or you're not, and you just kind of have to keep a pulse on, you know, your caucus and keep a pulse on the House. The thing I'd let everybody know is, you know, you're not the Speaker of the Republican Party. You're the Speaker of the House. And on day one, you have to have 51 votes to be Speaker of the House. And so, you know, you're not just the Speaker of a party. You're the Speaker of the whole House. You leave them duties up to the Majority Leader. Now, I'm not saying that I want to run the House, you know, to where, you know, I'm still a Republican, I'm still conservative, but I want to make sure that the House is run efficiently and everybody is respected the same way that I would want to be respected if a Democrat was running the place.
Yeah, and I appreciate how you said, you know, in taking this job, I'm not going to be afraid to stand up for the legislature, you know, as a co-equal partner in this a branch of government. Senator Galt, your thoughts on that, leadership and running a good session?
Yeah.
30 seconds.
A lot of it, yeah, which I passed on to Brandon was I learned from previous speakers that, I mean, I'm really good friends with Mark Blaisdell. When he was speaker, I was a freshman. He did the same thing for me, kind of taught. I'm, you know, friends with Austin Knutson. I don't know how many times I would call those two throughout the session and be like, what have you seen work in the past? What doesn't work? And then I kind of tried to bundle all that information and hand as much of it as I could to Brandon so that he was able to go on. So it's standing on the shoulders of giants. That it's luckily the institutional knowledge just keeps getting passed from speaker to speaker, which allows us to be successful. But it is because previous speakers taught us how to be successful.
Appreciate you both for the work you guys do for the public and for standing up in those leadership positions. It is State Senator Wiley Galt, Senate District 39, and Speaker of the House Brandon Lear. You guys have a great summer, okay? I know we'll chat in between now and whenever, but please thank you for your service and get out there and, you know, get the work done and get the fun done too, okay?
Absolutely. Will do. Tom, thanks for having us on.
Yep, super stuff. There it is again, Speaker Brandon Lear, House District 33 out of Savage, and Wiley Galt. Good to hear both of those guys on the program today. And I know they're back to work. Lots of things to catch up on.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.